Welcome to Follow the Medical Record, where healthcare experts give insights into the increasing importance of following a patient's medical record through the health ecosystem with compliance, privacy, security, and efficiency front and center. This podcast is brought to you by MRO and hosted by Don Hardwick, Senior Vice President of Client Relations at MRO. Don has been in the health information management industry for over 40 years and has extensive knowledge of how medical records make their way through the healthcare ecosystem. At MRO, Don is responsible for strategic client engagement programs and overall client satisfaction. To hear from all of MRO's industry experts, be sure to visit mrocorp.com for additional content and to sign up for our monthly e-newsletter. Over to you, Don.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Follow the Medical Record. I'm your host, Don Hardwick. You can learn more about me and my background on MRO's website at mrocorp.com and can connect with me on LinkedIn. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at MROCORP. I'm excited today to have Moira Washington on our program. Moira is the Vice President of Operations for MRO. So welcome, Moira, to the show today.
Thanks, Don. Happy to be here.
Thanks, Moira. Moira, if you could take a moment and just tell us a little bit about your background and more specifically, your current role at MRO.
Sure, yeah. So I joined MRO a little bit over 8 years ago. I started as a director of operations handling pretty much down in the southeast of the country. And over time, have worked my way up. I'm currently, as you said, VP of operations. So I oversee all of our staff across the country that are based at all of our client sites. Some of them are on site at client locations. And some of them, of course, these days are working remotely. And I'm also responsible for some of the operations at our two national service centers. We have one in Pennsylvania and one in Texas, and I oversee a lot of the behind the scenes things that happens, such as, you know, what call centers are printing and distribution, things like that.
Moira, today we're going to be talking about some of those items, more specifically about our remote workforce and the change in that environment that was created partly because of COVID, and then just partly because of the change in technology that we have today versus what we had a few years ago. Of course, COVID kind of introduced the necessity for going remote, but it enhanced our ability. All of the technology kind of caught up with that demand. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about that remote workforce. So, on this program, we have discussed various issues about health information or the associated data, such as legislative issues, IT security for remote staff, how facilities are audited, and in an enterprise approach to consistency in contract service. But one of the things that we haven't really discussed is the management of how that data or health information is orchestrated behind the scenes. So first of all, if you'll tell us a little bit, you went through some of the areas that you are managing for the company, but just so our listeners understand the scope of that, how many reports or how many people in the organization report up to you?
Yep. So in total, it's a little bit over 1,500 employees. And the way that that's split up is about 1,000 of them are what, you know, I call out in the field. So again, out at our client sites, and about 500 of them report up through our national service centers. And we've got that spread out, of course, across multiple different directors. So again, in the field, we have four directors who oversee different regions of the country. And then at our National Service Center, we have an AVP, Stan Zukarev, who oversees those teams as well. So everything is split down into structures and roles down into regional operations managers, area managers, and of course, all the way down into site and area supervisors as well. So we do have that hierarchy and structure built out so that no one manager has too many direct reports, because of course, you know, we have to have that interaction and that oversight at a reasonable level as well.
So what would you say While we're talking about direct reports, what would you say is an optimum number for someone at your level, and then kind of cascading down in the organization, what happens to that sphere of management responsibility?
Sure. So for myself, I currently have 7 direct reports, and I would say that's probably an optimal number at the moment, given the size of the country that I have to span and what's going on. As you start to move down in the hierarchy, you do have folks who can start to span more people than that, certainly more than 7 direct reports. So when you get to the regional and area manager level, quite often those folks can have up to about 20 folks reporting directly to them. That's the maximum that we would ever really want to go to. And you have to look at how it's set up to determine what somebody can manage from that perspective. So for example, we have managers who have 20 direct reports, but they're all at one site. So everybody's there, the communication's a bit more streamlined, the training is a little bit easier because you've got a team that's all together. We also, though, have managers who manage smaller groups of people across multiple different locations and sites. So it could be dealing with different EMRs, different organizations. And at that point, the complexity goes up a little bit. So you have to be careful there with how many direct reports. So quite often we can have a manager who's handling 10, 12 people. And that's optimal for them just because the complexity of what they're handling is increased.
Now that we're not in one location typically today because of the COVID issue, we've sent people home or they are working remote in a remote, more isolated fashion. Has that changed your perspective on that level of span of management?
Absolutely. I would say that we have increased our level of management over the last couple of years, specifically during COVID. At the height of COVID, I said we've got 1,000 people out in the field. At the height of COVID, a solid 50% of those had been transitioned to work from home. And for the most part, most of them have stayed there. Some have come back into the office at this point, but many of them have stayed there. And of course, we were following our clients' wishes with those people. So if a client wanted us to send our people to work remotely from home, that's what we did. If they wanted them to stay physically on site, then that's what we did. We would follow whatever they needed. But it certainly posed a whole new slew of challenges for our managers. The immediate effect was how to get people home physically with equipment and make sure that all of the connections and the security and the environment that they were working in was appropriate and hit the targets that we needed them to. So that was your initial response that we had to deal with. But then once you've actually got the folks at home set up and able to work properly, then of course you move into the how do you manage them now that they're not there in front of you every single day. So that was definitely a challenge. We had to spend a lot of time with managers training them and helping them adapt to that new environment. And yes, in some instances, we had to change setups and how that looked.
How have you remained? That's a tough position, and I'm sure that every company across the country has pretty much endured that transition in some way. So how did you remain, or have those remote staff remain feeling like they were connected to two things? Number one is MRO as an organization, and number two, the client that they served. They lost that, interpersonal connection when they all went home. So how did you maintain that connectivity with the remote staff?
Yeah, it's a great question. And then there was a lot of learning going on when all of this happens for everybody, I think. So what we had to do was understand it was a whole new way of communicating at that point. We had to move, you lose the water cooler aspect, right? Those little moments during the day when you're asking people, hey, how are you doing? something happened with your kids yesterday. Those little moments that are a little more difficult to schedule when everybody's working remotely. So we certainly moved to much more frequent meetings. Our IT department were great, and they sped up the implementation of Office 365 for us that had just started at the beginning of the pandemic, and they put a fast forward button on that and made that happen really quickly so that our folks could come together via, for example, Teams. We made sure the cameras were turned on during these meetings, because although you might not necessarily always feel like turning that camera on, it is important to see one another's faces. And we emphasized with our managers, the need to not just roll straight into a meeting and the agenda items and hitting everything, but taking the time to actually have a little bit of a chat with staff as well, as you move through the day. We even had some managers who, would set up a fun half an hour toward the very end of the day, sometimes even, after hours, where there was no work chat. It was simply to get on and show a picture of your pet, or talk about something funny that happened that day. And that was all, to get folks through the upheaval of the change and allow them to still feel connected to their co-workers.
Did your management staff also go through a sense of disconnect? Although I know your managers are somewhat remote anyway, and they always have been, but just the fact that they wouldn't be on site at a client's office like they have in the past, did they run through a time where they felt disconnected?
Absolutely, because you're absolutely right. Our managers are used to being on the go, out and about, hitting our client sites, meeting in person with our clients as well as with their teams. And so it's a really big change for a lot of them. Now, some of them did remain out in the field. We did have, again, many client sites where we were still staffing front desks for patient walk-ins, and so they were out in those environments. But there were a good amount of them that, yes, went completely to remote from home. So we had to take the same approach, at the director and VP level, having meetings with those folks, making sure we pulled them together, making sure we spent some time on the personal aspect of it, as well as more than ever before, one-on-ones were incredibly important. Taking the time to just stop and check in with people on their mental health and how they were feeling, and utilizing our online MRO Academy as well. A lot of new modules were loaded in there by Mariella Twiggs and her team that were based around how to manage this new environment and also how to manage your own personal health. So we got a lot of support from our training team around that as well, so that if we did sense that somebody was struggling a little bit, aside from talking through it ourselves with them, we had some other resources that we could point them to as well to help them out, which was great.
You talked a little bit about monitoring productivity and quality and so forth. How did that change during this time period? And even today, we're still in this environment where, although we're moving a little bit more back to a normal work schedule in the same environment, office, but a lot of people have found that this remote capability that we have is advantageous to them from family perspectives, getting the kids off to school, then working a part of the day, getting the kids back and working another section. Having that flexibility, has that proven to be an advantage from, I know that's an advantage from a personal standpoint, but did you find in this transition any degradation in quality or productivity from your staff?
Yeah, so we are extremely lucky that our platform, ROI Online, has always given us this great window into what our staff are doing on a daily basis. Because managers, even when people were on site, weren't always directly there with all of their staff all of the time. So we have this great reporting built into our platform that allows us to be able to see what a person is accomplishing throughout the day. You know, hour by hour, we can see the variations there. So that was a great, great help to our managers and being able to, you know, oversee and monitor what was going on. Obviously, they would look at everything at a high level, but if they needed to drill in, they could. They could get down into the weeds there and understand what someone was or was not getting done during the day. We also did have to work with our managers to sort of educate them that, hey, it is okay for somebody to log in, work for 3 hours, log out because they have to your point, you know, maybe perhaps take the kids to school, and then log back in an hour later. So the day became a little more unconventional. And we did have to spend some time working with some managers who weren't used to that and weren't real comfortable with that to get them to understand that, no, this is okay. It's all right to start to become more flexible as long as we still have our eye on the quality and the production piece of it. So all of the tools were there for our managers to monitor both the production and the quality. We have a lot of reporting in ROI Online as well that allows us to see, you know, what we call potential incidents before anything has even happened. We can see if an employee has made a mistake that was caught at one of our, you know, multiple double checks that we have in place. And we can see that perhaps that quality is taking a turn downwards, and it gives us the opportunity to sit down and coach and counsel them. So that in our platform was super, super helpful to our management to allow them to make sure that we weren't seeing any degradation in the production or the quality. Now, did we find some staff out there, very, very small handful, that you know, took advantage of the fact that they were working remotely from home and you know, some production levels went down there? There were some very small pockets of that out there. We were able to see that quickly because of the reporting that we have and, you know, address that appropriately. So I would say overall, in general, it was an advantage to us from a production and quality perspective for those folks that were working from home. You know, the distraction kind of disappeared, and they were able to just sit down and really focus in on the work at hand.
Now that you have an experience level here with remote staffing, what do you see going forward as a result of this remote workforce having the experience that you just mentioned? Their quality is good, their productivity is good. What do you see from an industry standpoint of continuing with this remote environment?
Yeah, I think that the hybrid environment that we're currently in is here to stay. You know, there are some folks that have determined that work from home is for them and that's what they want, and they're not really willing to look at any position that isn't fully work from home. And then there are other people out there who, you know, enjoy the office environment and do want to be part of that. So it's been interesting. You know, what we've learned is that it really is possible to send entire teams remotely to work from home and not see any degradation. It's possible to be completely successful there. We've seen that happen, and we have many clients who have told us, you don't ever need to come back into the office again. Release of information is now completely work from home. We don't need to see you. And that's great. We do also, though, have some employees out there that do like to be in the office. And I was actually with our National Service Center team in Texas last week, and I was chatting with some of those folks. And that was an interesting conversation because what I heard from some of them, and just to explain, we currently have a completely voluntary hybrid environment at our National Service Centers for most of our staff, meaning if you want to come in and work, you can come into the office. We're here. We've got a cubicle and a desk all ready for you. However, if you prefer to stay at home, that's perfectly okay too, as long as your production and quality are at the levels that are acceptable to us. And what I heard from some folks, they had to come into the office for some mandatory training that we had pulled people in for, and they weren't feeling really great about it. I don't really want to come into the office. I like this work from home. They came in, they went through the training, and they realized, oh my goodness, I kind of missed this. I missed this, and I think that moving forward, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come into the office 1 or 2 days a week, and the rest of the days I will spend remotely at home. And I love the fact that we are able to give our staff that level of flexibility in choosing what they want to do, again, as long as they're hitting the standards that we need them to hit. But it was interesting to me that, there were quite a lot of people who said, gosh, I didn't realize that I missed the office until I was actually back in the office. But I will say that I think going back to mandatory 100% of the time in the office, I don't think in the near future we're going to be back there. People like the flexibility, and if we try to enforce 100% in office, I believe that we'll see some resignations and we'll lose some talent. So of course we have to keep our eye on that piece too.
Certainly. I mean, people, there is a work-life balance that most organizations are considering more highly today than ever before, because you don't want to lose good talent because of too many stringent rules. So, as long as the rules can be enforced, meaning rules on productivity, rules on quality production, then you have a workforce out there that you can take advantage of that are very skilled people, and can do that with less, I would say, office overhead cost than ever before. I think it's certainly a good move to have that kind of flexibility personally. Moira, is there, if you could give any advice to our listeners, any lessons learned here, anything specifically that comes to mind that I know you're going to hit on communication because it is a big piece of it, but any other items that would help in this transition back to a office environment or hybrid office environment?
Yeah, I think making sure you give your staff the highest level of flexibility that you can at the moment is important. Understanding that they will, trusting them to do the right thing. Of course, having the data around what's happening and when is really important. It's nice to give the flexibility, but you really need to understand what is happening, and be able to monitor that in the different environments to check that there aren't any differences there as well. But ultimately, I think at the end of the day, everyone that works for us, they want to do the right thing. And we do have to have that level of trust in our folks and know that they will do the best by us as long as we are doing the best by them.
Moira, thank you so much for this insight in this changing environment with managing the level of staff that you're responsible for. It's been very insightful. So, again, thank you for joining the show today. It's certainly been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
For more insight on a patient's medical record through the health ecosystem, visit our show's page on MROCORP.com and be sure to explore additional resources and thought leadership. You can also check out our program page on healthcarenowradio.com. Finally, be sure to connect with us on Twitter at MROCORP. Until we talk again, I'm Don Hardwick, your host. Good day.